Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Ripley's Believe It or Not. The longest running enterprise in pursuit of strange and true facts returns to television Sunday night on the Travel Channel. Executive producer and travel vice president Daniel Schwartz joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. The TV festival circuit is in full swing, with ATX underway in Austin, Texas, and Series Fest running on all cylinders later this month in Denver. Norfolk hits Long Island again this fall, October to be exact, and when they do, there's a new science-centric feature. We'll learn more next half hour with programming director Elias Pagianos and Judge Heather Lynch. And if that just-enthroned Jeopardy! Champion James Holzhauer hasn't boosted your appetite for knowledge, Best Ever Trivia Show might, starting Monday on GSN. We'll have executive producer Brandon Huntington on hand next hour. Also ahead, our classic trivia question this week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Great to have you with us on this June Friday, for the program All About Television, 79 degrees at the top of the hour on this June 7th. We are happy you are aboard wherever you're catching us. We have a great 90 minutes in store for you, a lot of super guests along the way, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's very simple. Pick up the phone, bring your voice up, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And lo and behold, after a week away, our chat room is back. Simon Apple 04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. If you're shy about using the phone, no problem. Put your questions or comments in the room, and we'll get to them. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. All the instructions and other people can be live with you. Here's some factoids for you on a Friday. Did you know that rockfish can live for more than 200 years? Or that Uranus is almost 20 times farther from the sun than the Earth is? And how about this one? In the Middle Ages, Europeans attempted to cure muscle pain by drinking, yes, drinking, powdered gold, a.k.a. carrot juice. Now, how do we find out about all those factoids? Simple. We read today's Believe It or Not. The amazing illustrated feature began more than 100 years ago by cartoonist Robert Ripley. At the time, back in 1918, he was a person who covered the world of sports. And besides the cartoonist, well, I'd like to maybe do a little item about some of the more unique oddities involving great and ungreat sports people. And he decided to put together a one-shot cartoon called Champs and Chumps, syndicated to newspapers around the country. Well, it worked so well, he made a daily feature, and nearly a year later, he decided to expand it from just sports to all sorts of unusual factoids, and he named it Ripley's Believe It or Not. And it has become, in the century since, one of the most unique multimedia franchises in the history of the civilized world. And along the way, there have been movies, there have been books, big and small, there has been radio shows, television shows, and the Ripley attractions all over the country, including here in New York near Times Square. And, believe it or not, podcasting. Have you heard of the Believe It or Not cast? That's right. Yes, Ripley is into the podcasting world as well. When it comes to television, Ripley's Believe It or Not has had a very interesting history. Ripley himself introduced the show as the host back in 1949. And 13 weeks later, unfortunately, after a live episode, he died of a heart attack. The show continued with other hosts for another year and a half. Then it wasn't until 1982 that ABC brought the show back, with Jack Palance as the host. Ripley's Believe It or Not ran on ABC Thursday nights in prime time for 4 seasons, and rerun ever since. And then in 2000, Dean Cain became the host of another version of Ripley's Believe It or Not that ran on TBS for 3 seasons. And in between the Jack Palance and the Dean Cain hosted shows, there was an animated version, although it was not as much on the factoids as it was on the character of Ripley himself. It was an animated show. It ran a season. Well, this Sunday night, Ripley's Believe It or Not is back for its 4th live-action version. This time with the popular star Bruce Campbell of Briscoe County and Ash vs. Evil Dead fame as the host. It premieres this Sunday night at 9 o'clock on the Travel Channel. And joining us live from Knoxville, Tennessee, is the executive producer and Travel Channel Vice President, Daniel Schwartz. Daniel, great to have you aboard.
Great to be here. I'm a big fan of your show, and frankly, I was shocked and delighted with how much you know about the subject matter, but then you always do, so thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, Daniel. I really appreciate the thoughts. I've been a big fan of Ripley's for a very, very long time. I've read the books. I've even seen some of the Warner Brothers shorts back in the 30s that Turner Classic Movies has been running. It's also on YouTube. But it's also a very interesting television history. And how did Travel Channel become part of the history?
Well, that's a very good question, actually. That's a phenomenal question. I had a Ripley's project that I was schlepping around for a while, and it really wasn't Ripley's, believe it or not. It was an iteration on buying objects. But in talking about it, we thought it's been a generation. It's been 20 years. Maybe we can find a way to relaunch the concept and the idea for a whole new generation, and that's pretty much where it started.
Why do you think Ripley's has had a century of success in practically every entertainment medium known to mankind and womankind?
Well, I've actually thought about this a lot. And my theory is that, you know, it's not about sports stars, okay? It's not about people with freak skills. It's not about people who have unusual attributes. A little bit of everything that's awesome, sometimes extreme, mind-boggling, and I think it's also, maybe I'm projecting, but it's always been for me an attitude of awe and wonder and celebration. So we're not ever laughing at people. We're celebrating them.
And it's amazing the range of facts, the range of situations that this, what started out as an illustrated panel or strip in newspapers across the country, has done through the years. Some of the interesting factoids that have come out have been, in fact, in some cases, history-changing. Many people may not know this, but in the 1920s, it was Ripley's, believe it or not, that came up with the unique factoid, which a lot of people didn't believe at the beginning, that the Star Strangled Banner originally came from a drinking song. And it became a national sensation where finally it was approved, I think, by Congress as the national anthem.
Well, that's exactly true. I mean, also, that's a perfect example of what we're talking about. It's not just people. It's factoids and just oddities that you didn't know. It comprises the world of, I call it WTF.
And how long did it take to get Ripley's back on television through your network? How did it come to get pulled all together?
It took probably, you know, with our merger and all that, about 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And we should put out the merger of the Scripps Networks with Discovery.
Yes, that's what I meant, because originally we weren't sure it fit our brand, and then it got held, but I kept talking to various people, and then we thought, what if we just relaunch it as True Blue, you know, like one of the TV shows, but maybe more currently relevant. And, I mean, once we got all that done, it's been just a year.
Mm-hmm. Ripley's, believe it or not, the fourth live-action version in this franchise's history will premiere at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time this Sunday night on the Travel Channel, hosted by Bruce Campbell. And we've got the executive producer, who's also a vice president, executive at the Travel Channel, Daniel Schwartz, who is live from Knoxville, Tennessee, this half hour. On tomorrow, will be televised. Believe it or not, and you can believe it. Simon Applebaum with you live from wherever you are. 79 degrees at the top of the hour. Hope you're having a great wrap of your week with us on the program Mobile Television. And if you have a question or comment for Daniel, bring it in, 646 646- 652-2906, or use our chat room. It's back up and running, SimonApple04 by name. We have another 90-day episode coming your way to start the week on Monday. Coming up next week, Wednesday to be exact, ABC will bring back two of the classic game shows of the 1980s, the show where fortunes were made on the turn of a single card, namely Card Sharks, and yes, the show with big bucks and no enemies, Press Your Luck. Monday on Tomorrow's Tall Guys, we'll have a live exclusive interview with the executive producers of both shows, from Press Your Luck, John Quinn, and from Card Sharks, Jack Martin. They'll both be with us live in the same segment. Then, CBS All Access next week brings back Strange Angel for a brand new season. We'll have the creator executive producer Mark Heyman, and we'll also have his fellow executive producer David DeGlorio with us. And finally, we will meet the person who put Nightflight on the map and saw it become one of the most popular USA Network late night shows in the network's history and the history of late night television. Stuart Shapiro will be joining us. And in our classic trivia question of the week, you'll have an opportunity to win his brand new book, Identify Yourself. But you'll also have an opportunity to win, and we've never offered this before, a subscription to the Nightflight programming service that's been available for the last 3 years on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Stuart Shapiro from Nightflight, now a programming service on smart TV sets and smart devices, and you'll have the opportunity to win a subscription to that service next Monday, live, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What have you been like, Daniel, to work with the Ripley people, who are based, I understand, in Florida, on this series and get them involved in a way they haven't been since the TBS show back in 2000?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a TV person, it was a dream come true. Norman and Sabrina and all of the people there, they're so excited that it's like palpable. So the first time I met them was actually in Austin, where the producers of the show are, and they just showed us all of this from the vaults restored footage that nobody had seen in half a century. And we're excited to talk about ways to incorporate, you know, their IP, things that hadn't been seen. And they're just incredible. I mean, they're coming out with a picture book and what they call a bookazine. And, I mean, they couldn't be better partners if they didn't just pay for it all. They're incredible. I actually would work for them. I think they're just really passionate about their brand, and you can't fake that.
And, of course, let's talk about Bruce Campbell. A lot of people know Bruce from his work on Briscoe County, a big cult show for Fox years ago, but, of course, also more recently, Ash vs. Evil Dead, which had a nice 3-year run on Starz. How did he get involved in making the show, and what did it like for him to do it?
Well, I mean, obviously, well, not obviously. It took 4 months to cast it. And, you know, you go back and forth with a lot of people. And from the very beginning, I wanted Bruce Campbell because I thought he was a perfect mix of he appeals to different generations, different sensibilities. He's an appealing person, but he has a sense of humor. And so what happened is over a course of probably 4 months, of batting around people and either us turning them down, them turning us down, we finally all agreed we really wanted Bruce. And he was awesome, frankly. I mean, I didn't realize just how good he is. Like, this is a guy who he watches all the shows ahead of time. He reads all the scripts ahead of time. He asks questions. And then you think, okay, he has a teleprompter. He's just going to show up. He's actually memorized everything. He's memorized what he's going to say, and then he'll do a couple perfect takes and then say, like, hey, what do you think if I try it this way? And then generally his way or his other idea is the one we use. So all I can say is, I mean, he's been typecast a little bit in his earlier career, but he's a great actor. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he can play things in a myriad of ways. But he is funny. I'll admit that.
Now, one thing about this version of Ripley's that is different from the other live-action versions is that each episode has a theme. Before, it was sort of like a catch-as-catch-can, and if it does have a theme, it does. If it doesn't have a theme, it doesn't. But you're along for the ride. But in this case, it's the idea is to have each episode do a theme. And for the first one coming up on Sunday night, you're dealing with people who are sort of performing the outrageous or have very unusual abilities.
Yes. Do you want me to elaborate? We did that because we didn't want it to be completely catch-as-catch-can. I mean, obviously you want variety. So the first episode I call Natural-Born Thrillers. And there are people, one day I discovered I could throw a playing card 92 miles an hour. Who knew? They've got something going on, and it seems like a neat organizing principle. And then another one is called Invisible Worlds. And for whatever reason, it's people whose skill, like one man can feel gravity. He can pile up rocks that shouldn't be able to be piled effortlessly. Another guy, we used OK Go, you know, the band, and they want to show you things you'd never see in real life, like things slow down 200,000 times. And so we just kind of organize it in these ways that cohere but allow variety, if that makes sense.
And the variety is really amazing between each episode. You've got an episode coming up later this month called Showstoppers, which have everybody from a group called the Lords of Lightning. These are three folks from London who know how to channel electricity through these very small coils to this woman, Lily Heblish, who has a million-plus social media followers, and she decides to thank them by putting thousands of dominoes in a position where they all have to fall perfectly or it doesn't happen at all.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is the showstoppers as opposed to the – they weren't born with that skill, but they're just doing something where your mouth is agape. You're like, why? You know what I mean? And I like that episode because, I mean, it's about people that you can't take your eyes off of. And then we have people that really, forces of nature is another episode. And it's like one guy has a skull that's multiple times thicker than a normal skull. So he's like, rocks, cinder blocks, things on fire are like landing on him. And that's just kind of fascinating, you know? People that in a way either they communicate with animals or nature or they have some weird ability. And we have a guy who, Jose Ferrara, he has a hypotrichosis, and you've seen this maybe, the people that are like the wolf man that are covered in hair. But what's different about the way we treat of it is they're just people. They're not freaks. They're people, and they're smart people, and they have families, and that's kind of nice to get that insight.
Something else, too, that's very important is the amount of research that goes into Ripley's Believe It or Not, which you don't see. But when you see a fact, that is whether it's in the books or in the newspaper pictorial or whether it's in comic books or whether it's on television or radio, whatever, I'm sure there had to be a lot of documentation and a lot of double-checking and triple-checking to make sure that, yes, these historical facts are as we say they are, or in the case of showcasing people with an unusual skill, yes, these people are legit. They're up to it. Give me a sense of the kind of research that went into each of these episodes or when you had to deal with particular subjects.
Well, it's not horrible, but it is relentless in the sense that, like, just to give one example, so we have this story called Die by the Sword about this guy, Die Andrews, and he was one of X amount of people that was able to swallow a 120-degree curved sword, right? And we're like, wow, he's one of two people in the world. We're mastering the show, and we find out somebody else is out there. We can't deliver it saying two, right? It has to be, however, three. So we redo the show, and this goes actually for a lot of them. If it's 50 pounds, it's 50 pounds. If it's not 50 pounds, you can't say it's 50 pounds because people care. So part of the Ripley's brand is the integrity of what you say is what you say. And it may be outrageous, but nonetheless, you owe it to your viewers and the fans and yourself that it be, like, accurate and not just checked or double-checked, but triple-checked, and that's hard. I'm not going to lie to you. It's hard, and it's something I'm a little ruthless about.
Mm-hmm. One thing, by the way, if you have been a fan of the newspaper feature for years, is the artwork that takes place each and every single feature for all these 100 years. And first it was done by Ripley, but it was also done by other artists who followed him, including a man named Paul Frem, who is a distinguished art director, cartoonist, who did Ripley's for many, many years in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I have to tell you that the people that are not only researching the feature, but also who actually draw the feature, they're very special people. I don't think they have enough credit for what they do. And I just want to take a moment to really acknowledge them, what they have done for this feature and then for this enterprise over the last century. Ripley's Believe It or Not, the new television series premieres this Sunday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, hosted by Bruce Campbell on the Travel Channel. We've got Daniel Schwartz. He's one of the executive producers, but also an executive at Travel Channel, vice president. And he joins us live from Knoxville, Tennessee, this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Good to have you with us, wherever you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio Speaker. Be in the conversation with us. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Next Friday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, there's a brand new game show coming up on ABC called Holy Moly. Steph Curry's involved with it, and if you've played miniature golf, you have never seen a miniature golf course anywhere like Holy Moly. The executive producer, Wes Denning, will join us. And then we'll talk to a former cable network cable system president named Mike Wilner. At one point, he was the owner and the president of one of the top cable system owners in the country, Insight Communications. Where is he at now, and how is he working with the cable industry? Wes has got some very big thoughts about what he does with a company called Pantera, and also we'll talk to get his thoughts about where he sees TV at and going. Michael Wilner and Wes Denning, they're both joining us live Friday, next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. For you, Daniel, what's it been like for you to get this franchise and bring it on your network and then bring it back to life again?
I would say, I mean, I've produced in the 11 years I've been at Travel, probably about 50 series, and I would say without hesitation or exaggeration that I've been the most excited and scared. Just scared because it means a lot to me as a kid that read this. It's been a lot of work, I'm not going to kid you, but very satisfying work, and it's been a process. Just to give you an example, I really wanted to shoot it in the Ripley's Warehouse. None of the other franchises had done that, and I just thought this at least differentiates us in one big way. None of them had done it. And believe it or not, you know, it wasn't a foregone conclusion. It wasn't until a month or two before that we figured out how to make it work because it's a giant warehouse. So just lighting it is a huge undertaking. And so I would just say it was surprising and different. I had never done a show quite like it before.
Mm-hmm. By the way, given that this is the 100th anniversary of Believe It or Not, as the feature it is, are there any plans in any of the episodes to do some like special memorable factoids from Ripley's or do any sort of 100th anniversary celebration segments?
Well, I can't. If I told you, it wouldn't be a surprise, and I'd have to kill you. So that's a joke. But what I would just say is stay tuned. We're very aware of the 100th anniversary. We're very grateful that that's our year. It kind of adds another layer of excitement. And I would say just stay tuned because it's a very surprising. I mean, it is what it is, in terms of the brand. And I would still maintain there are a lot of surprising stories and things in it that you might not expect.
I'll tell you, as I said, I've been a big fan for years of Ripley's, and I'm in awe of the organization and what it does day in and day out to bring the facts that they do. And by the way, the facts I read at the beginning of the segment, they are from today's Ripley's Believe It or Not feature, which, by the way, you can either find in newspapers across the country or you can find it on the web. And, in fact, if you miss a an illustrated feature from earlier this week or not. We're going to tell you, give the website where you can see those features and also learn more about the entire Ripley organization, including their podcast and other things too. In fact, in addition to the Believe It or Not cast, they also have a podcast minute that's been around for a couple of years, so we'll get back to you in a second. What are some of the other topics, by the way, that are going to be coming up in this first batch of episodes?
Well, before I tell you that, and this isn't a commercial, but there are also sneak peeks on the Ripley site and on our site and around, if you want to see a minute or two. Another topic that we're doing are things like, surprise, surprise, we call this World War Spew. It's about this guy who's an expert on animals who excrete or spew just things you could not believe, like boiling oil. And killer red blood stuff. A family that literally, like, risks their life together every day, a team of stuntmen and their sons. And it's just, you get to see in real time, like, wow, they really are risking their lives. This is, like, maybe not a fabulous idea. So I think that's new. I think some of the things that I was really surprised by, just because I hadn't seen it before, were this guy who talks to bees and then does this thing where they swarm him and cover him. And I thought, well, that's pretty new. We have a segment on sex in the wild, which is the most unusual animal sex on Earth, but very, like, PG-13. We have this guy in Beyond Driven. I don't know why he does it, but he's fabulous. He dresses in this red, like, Florida. I mean, he's covered in a red jumpsuit, and he, like, puts a chair on a chair, on the side of a cliff overlooking a fjord, and then he stands on his hands for, like, hours. And it's not just that he's risking his life. He does it for the picture. You know, look, and so just a lot of, like, really unusual people is the way I would put it, where they really have something wonderful to share. And I would say overall it's the attitude that you experience that makes people inspiring. And sometimes they're just unusual. Like, we have the Prince of Pooh, a guy who collects, like, dinosaur and other prehistoric animal poo, you know, doo-doo. And he has a whole museum devoted to doo-doo. And we have also the erection collection, which has never been done, which is a museum devoted to the penis. You know, whale penises, you name it. So that's a way to sort of pay service to that other side of Ripley's, which is not just people performing, but the things.
The strange, the weird, the unexpected, the unique, and all true. Ripley's Believe It or Not, the new television series premieres this Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, hosted by Bruce Campbell, and you'll find it on the Travel Channel. Check your Ripley's for where that network is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to www.travelchannel.com. It's www.travelchannel.com. And if you want to catch up on the latest Ripley's Believe It or Not cartoons, plus check out their podcast, check out other memorabilia, check out the auditoriums that they have all over the country and around the world, including here in New York near Times Square. Here's where you go online, www.ripleys, that's with an S, www.ripleys.com. I've checked out the site. I think you'll find a really good reading and a whole lot more. One more time, Ripley's Believe It or Not on the Travel Channel, opening episode Sunday night, 9:10 Eastern and Pacific Time. Daniel Schwartz, executive producer, also executive with the Travel Channel. Thank you for making the time to be with us today. Good luck with the series. Hopefully, like the other Ripley shows, a great and long-running store.
It's been an honor, and I thank you. I really feel privileged. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, too, Daniel. Thank you for the thoughts. Have a wonderful weekend, and all our best to everybody at Ripley's for a great 100 years and hopefully another century more to come.
Okay, bye-bye.
Daniel Schwartz, live with us from Knoxville, Tennessee, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now, some words from the following folks at Audible.com. You know, there's a lot of exciting Audible original programming that you can get when you go to audibletrial.com/televised, including a new story where about 12-year-old twins, you might say, doing some time travel. It's called Jukebox Joyride, and that could be one of the titles you get for a free trial run at audible.com. Now, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, certainly inspiration, too. Over 100,000 titles to choose from, and a growing number of them are Audible Originals. Everything from original productions to off-Broadway and Broadway shows, regional theater, one-man, one-woman shows as well. You listen on any device, including whatever you're hearing this on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. Get 3 free audiobooks, one of them on trial, and great customer service from the fine folks at Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And you will know that Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. So once again, for that free 3-book trial and 1 month to hear them, audibletrial.com/televised. We come back. Norfolk TV Festival comes your way for trip number 4 in October, and it's a very new wrinkle that they've got dealing with the world of scripted science and technology. Well, our program director, Elias Pagonas, and one of the judges, Heather Lynch, will join us live from New York and Stony Brook, Long Island, respectively, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com and speaker.com. Together, more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for Rock and Roll Union. Check out this musical show tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, and only on Block Talk Radio. Remember, visit BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Mark's Bobby Televised. Second 30 minutes for our 90-minute edition. Happy you're with us wherever you're catching us. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. 79 degrees at the top of the hour. More great guests coming your way in the hour ahead, so stay tuned and be part of the action. How? Pick up the phone. Use this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. One of the big TV festivals that have been evolved over the last few years is the Norfolk TV Festival in Long Island. It started 3 years ago. It's about to do number 4, which will be taking place first weekend of October. And this year, they're introducing a brand new project in conjunction with the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation. Its foundation is getting more and more involved in getting television shows off the ground, including the popular and critically acclaimed Nat Geographic series, The Hot Zone, starring Julianne Margulies. Joining us live from New York is the programming director at the Norfolk TV Festival, Elias Pagonas. Elias, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. And joining both of us live from Stony Brook, Long Island, Stony Brook University, is one of the judges this year, Norfolk's Heather Lynch. Heather, great to have you aboard.
Great to be here.
And Heather, I'll start with you. Why did you decide to be a judge this year?
Oh, I jumped at the chance. I don't think I thought more than about 10 seconds about it, because the opportunity to just see how people are using science or talking about science or communicating science to the public is a huge interest of mine, and TV is the medium of our age, so it's a great opportunity to see how creative people could be.
Yeah. Elias, this festival has really grown in relatively short fashion. It started originally as a way to sort of celebrate where TV is at and where it's going with panel sessions. Last year, you really got into showcasing pilots, and this year you have this brand new feature with the Sloan Foundation where you're going to showcase a pilot for a scripted series that involves science and technology things. How did you make the deal with the foundation?
You know, this is it's very exciting because it's actually the first project that the Sloan Foundation has made in the world of television. They've done amazing things, as you know, on radio and film. And I think, you know, they saw how significant of a social impact that TV's having, and they wanted to get involved. And I think they thought this was a great way, holding a contest where literally anyone can submit a script, and we will produce a actual TV pilot that will then premiere at the festival on October 4th. So it seemed like a great fit, I think, for us as part of the festival, and also for the foundation.
And let's be clear, Elias, this is something that anybody could get involved with. You do not need a talent agent to do it. You don't need, like, have a manager do this. If you wanted to create a pilot for this, as long as it has science or technology-centric themes, you could get in.
That's exactly right, and that's one of the main reasons why I joined, because it's just so difficult for any TV show to get made, and it's so difficult for young writers or emerging writers or maybe someone who's always had a story idea that never had the opportunity to get involved in the system. And one of the wonderful things about the North Fork TV Festival is that it's a bridge. It's a bridge between independent voices and the TV network industry. And as you said, anyone can submit a script. So we're being very loose about formatting. What we're really concerned about is just telling really relevant stories about people in the science world and the science community.
And how does the science world has become more and more centric in scripted television? I mentioned The Hot Zone, the recent National Geographic miniseries. Linda Oakes, who is the executive producer of that series, was on our program several weeks last month, before it was around the time it was showcased at the Tribeca Film Festival, which the Salt Foundation, by the way, had representatives there for that. But you have shows like Silicon Valley, shows like Humans,
right,
which just wrapped up 4 years on AMC, Halt and Catch Fire, another AMC series. So, Heather, we have seen a growth in terms of science in the heart of scripted TV.
That's right, yeah. And I think, like, Sloan saw that, and they just want to see a lot more of it. When they used all of your examples, like, you know, CSI, Silicon Valley, Numbers. You know, these are shows that, yes, they do, they are in the science world, but the drama does not necessarily have to come from the science. I think it's very important that we know that people who are working on computers or wearing lab coats have very layered, interesting, dramatic lives, and we want to share those stories. And I know Heather has been super valuable in kind of helping us make sure that whichever script you do choose is as realistic as possible, which has been a tremendous help, not just Heather, but all the other science judges as well.
So, Heather, do we know how many scripts have been entered, or pilot scripts have been entered in the competition? And then once we do, how are you? What's sort of like your criteria as an individual judge about which pilot will ultimately get made?
Well, I think Elias can tell better than I how many total were submitted. I've only seen maybe the few that have bubbled to the top. But personally, my criteria is that it kind of speaks to that richness that Elias mentioned, that it's not necessarily about science, but it's about the scientists and how science fits into their lives, that they are regular people and they have drama inside and outside the lab that I think can make for a great show. So obviously accuracy to the science is important, but I think more importantly is being accurate to what it means to be a scientist and not to stereotype scientists or put them in, you know, they may have the lab coat on sometimes, but most of their day is spent not with the lab coat, and they're navigating all the other things in their lives that humans do.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Heather, when you were growing up, did you see a lot of science programming on, like, on Saturday morning television or elsewhere?
You know, I think I was very influenced by the kind of nature programs that you might find today on Discovery or National Geographic, which were very much focused on science. And I don't remember having the kinds of really great science-themed shows that we have nowadays. I'm thinking, you know, some of the ones that were mentioned or Bones or CSI. I think those came along more recently to now. But I think television plays a really important role in inspiring young scientists and getting them to think outside of, you know, what might be in their town or their state.
Yeah, you know, growing up, you know, I was born in 1955, and grew up in the late 50s, early 60s. But I remember there were shows like, of course, Watch Mr. Wizard, Don Herbert, and one of the first great communicators of science. It was Exploring on NBC for a couple of seasons with Dr. Albert Hibbs. There was the Bell Science series, the specials with Frank Baxter. There was then later on, there was Beekman's World, which was a very popular show on CBS. So there have been cases of shows that have had, there was What's New on PBS, Spectrum, a series that was like Family or Science. Science programming has been around in different ways, but it's really been the last 15, 20 years, we've seen a lot of science in scripted television as opposed to unscripted, like Discovery Channel, Nat Geographic shows, or nature's like Mr. Rollins' Wild Kingdom, or way back when there were science shows for kids.
Sure, and I actually think I like how we've seen a rise of shows like Big Bang Theory that are comedies that involve science, but I think highlight that it doesn't have to be quite so serious all the time, and that science can be fun as well as educational.
We are talking about the new science script project at the 4th Annual Norfolk Television Festival, which, by the way, is taking place October 4th and 5th in Long Island. And we've got the programming director of the festival, Elias Gagranos, and we also have from Stony Brook University, Judge Heather Lynch. They're both with us live here in the New York area. On tomorrow, we televise this half hour. Simon Happ, I'm with you live from New York. Happy you're aboard with us on this Friday afternoon of June 2019. If you have a question or comment for our guests, don't be shy. Be involved at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonHappo04, my name. Coming up later this half hour, our classic trivia question of the week. We almost had somebody get the answer, but not quite. So our prize currently is still in play. And stay tuned on Monday. You're going to get the opportunity to win maybe our most unique prize we've offered yet when we have Stuart Shapiro of Night Flight joining us. That's next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Elias, how many entries do you have, and what is the judging process going to be like?
Sure, great question. So right now we have about 60 scripts, all of which that show a certain level of potential. So what happens is we have a group of readers who are all in the film, TV, or theater world, and then they score these scripts. And then I review them, and I make sure a lot of the scripts, several of the scripts that have come in also fall under the category of science fiction or fantasy, which is, something that we are not making. It's something that the Sloan Foundation is not looking to sponsor. So once I vet the scripts that have gone through the readers' hands, we send those on to the judges. And with the judges, we're really not looking for a traditional scoring system. I think it's very important to have a number associated with these scripts because they've already been kind of pre-screened. But what I want to hear is their overall thoughts. And the judges who are all in the science field are also, fans of drama. So they have very insightful notes and ideas. So the contest runs until June the 12th. We will announce the winning script the end of June, early July. And the way we will choose that script is myself, the judges, and the founders of the TV festival are going to choose the script that we believe best represents the Sloan Foundation's message and also what we feel like we could a story that we could tell the best also.
And once you announce the winner, how much time will they have to put the pilot together? And then, of course, the pilot's going to be shown at the festival in October.
Right. So another reason why I jumped on board is because I really enjoy a challenge. I come from the independent film world. So as soon as we choose the script, we go right into pre-production. And we're going to work with the writer to try and get that script that we've selected through a really rigorous yet quick development process to try and get the best version of their story out there. So from July, the first 2 weeks of July is going to be all about honing the script, picking the locations, casting the actors. We have a lot of great resources, so we think we're going to get some really exciting actors that are well-known in this show as well. So we're going to shoot that the last 2 weeks of July, and then I'm going to work with the team in post-production to get it all set during the month of August so that we will premiere the trailer for the show the first week of September, and then we're going to have an amazing screening in Greenport, Long Island, at a lovely theater. And we're also going to announce the festival's Canopy Award winner, which is like a Lifetime Achievement Award, which I can't announce now, but it is a very well-known celebrity who has been on, TV. He's TV royalty. So I'm very excited to have the festival announce that in the next few weeks as well.
Mm-hmm. Did either of you expect to have 60 scripts enter in this first go-around? And also, what about the variety of subject matter? Did you find that there was a lot of inventiveness, whether it was scripted drama or comedy or sketch comedy or some very unique formats? I'm also curious whether any of them might be interactive, given the fact that we're now starting to see people like Netflix and YouTube experiment with interactive television, both series and
there were. Yeah, there were. I was really surprised because, you know, normally it's difficult to get a lot of scripts for script contests. You know, many of the most well-known ones only get, you know, several hundred maybe. And we are, you know, we are very specific in that we want a science script. So I was very impressed by the number of scripts that we got, especially in the very short time frame, which is just 1 month. And those scripts are extremely varied. I know Heather and I have spoken about this as well. I mean, we have everything from absurdist comedy to murder mysteries to, as you said, interactive. There's one all about virtual reality. People have really amazing stories and unique voices and a very fun point of view that I was not expecting on the topic of science. So I think we don't know what we will have. It might be a comedy, it might be a drama. As you said, it might be some kind of Netflix interactive style show as well.
Heather, from here, how is the judging process going to go? Are you going to meet with the judges together? Are you going to judge individual entries separately? You'll judge a couple and another judge will go, and so on and so forth.
Well, to this point, Elias has been sending them along the ones that I think meet that first ratings bar, and I think Elias will speak to maybe what the final selection process will be. But so far, we've been sort of taking them one at a time and picking them apart for, I guess, both scientific accuracy and drama or comedy, and especially to make sure that they have legs, that there's something that could be built beyond the pilot, because I think that's often the challenge, is to build something that has somewhere to go and is not just sort of a pilot.
Yeah, one of the scripts we're most excited about is this murder mystery that the lead character it's a lead female scientist, and she's a neuroscientist, and it's a really fascinating story that revolves around perception and how the mind sees things, and I think those are the type of stories we're looking for, like stories that have a diverse cast and a story that we might not a story we know but set in a world of science.
Mm-hmm. We want to welcome somebody to our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. If you have a question or comment for our guest, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Again, we're talking about the new science scripted pilot project that will be popping up at the 4th Annual Norfolk TV Festival in Greenport, Long Island, weekend of October 4th and 5th. We are speaking with Elias Gebranos. He is the programming director of the festival this year, and Heather Lynch from Stanford University, who is one of the judges. They're with us live here in the New York area this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Sign up on me live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our guests or many minutes with them, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, as somebody already is doing. Don't forget, coming up on Monday, we will preview the brand new ABC game shows, Press Your Luck and Card Sharks, with their executive producers, both in the same segment. We're talking John Quinn and Jack Martin. Then, from CBS All Access's popular series, Strange Angel, going into its second season next week, we've got the creator executive producer, Mark Heyman, and his executive producer colleague, David DiGilio. And finally, we will have the creator of one of the most popular and most unique late-night shows ever in the 1980s, USA's Night Flight, Stuart Shapiro. In case you don't know, Night Flight is now a 24/7 subscription service available on smart TV sets and smart devices, now in its third year. And in our Classic Trivia Question segment on Monday, you will have the unique opportunity to win a subscription to that Night Flight service when Stuart Shapiro joins us. So be with us next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Elias, what are some of the other new wrinkles that will be happening in Norfolk this year?
Yeah, well, this is a very exciting year. We've grown so much, and it's really exciting to be kind of right at the front row of all this. So what we're doing is we have four TV pilots that are produced independently, which is like a new thing where, independent filmmakers, they used to just make films, but now they're doing TV shows, web series. So we are going to premiere four shows that are all of very different genres and of very high quality. And we are going to have two Lifetime Achievement Awards, as I mentioned. We're going to have amazing parties. We're going to have celebrities. We're going to have TV executives. One of the things I'm most excited about is there will be a TV buyers panel this year, which if anyone knows, it's very hard to sell a project to a network or a streaming network. And we are going to have, the top buyers from some of the top streaming networks there. People could come down, they could see amazing independent television, they could learn how TV shows are made, they can get involved in this new independent TV community. It's one of my favorite festivals on the TV circuit. It's one I screened my first TV pilot there 2 years ago, and since then I've been very involved because I really believe in what they're trying to do out there.
Mm-hmm. I know that a pilot that was presented at Northbrook a couple of years ago up north was also presented at Series Fest, is now going to become a series that Byron Allen's Entertainment Studios has bought. We don't know yet where it's going to run or how. We're trying to stay in touch with Allen's company and see. And as soon as we do, because we had the people from up north on our show a number of years ago,
yeah,
when they had the Series Fest screening. So we'll see what happens with that. But I'm curious whether any of the pilots that were presented last year have found a buyer. And also with this year's crop, given the timing of this, where we have Apple launching Apple TV Plus this fall, WarnerMedia launching this fall, early 2020, Comcast and Universal, their streaming service, Walmart launching Vudu with original programming, and maybe Echo with interactive television this summer, this fall, and of course Disney Plus in November, whether any of those people have definitely made plans to come down and see you.
Yes, a lot of those are. I can't officially announce who they are, but a lot of the services that you mentioned will be there. And, that's another thing that the North Fork TV Festival is trying to do, is become a marketplace. So there's a void between the independent creator and Hollywood. And there's really no place for someone to make something and screen it and show it in front of people who could then create it and make it into a series. So this is one of very few venues that if you screen at our festival, I guarantee you, your show will be seen by the people that should see it and can give you these amazing opportunities. My show that screened there 2 years ago called Shoot Me Nicely, starring Linda Hamilton and William Sadler. After we screened there, I mean, it really opened up a lot of doors, and we're currently in the process of trying to sell the series. So if you have a show, I suggest you go to northforktv.com. Submissions for the TV pilot are also until June 12th. We have screeners who are watching shows every day and giving us ratings, and the quality of these shows is really impressive. So I can't wait to show it to the audiences.
And any word about the pilots that were screened last year?
Last year, I know the development process is very long. So although all the shows are in some form of sale and development, usually it's a multiple year situation. Like so Up North screened 2 years ago and they just got sold. So we won't really know how these shows shake out until next year or the following year. It's just a very long process.
And before we let both of you go, Elias, because of what looks like the success of this science venture, are other foundations coming to you, or are you going to them about similar projects that deal with other themes beyond science and technology?
Yeah, I know the team is very excited to, you know, grow our original programming. Because as I mentioned, it's almost impossible for an independent creator to get a show greenlit. So the festival is very active in raising money and getting involved with different philanthropic organizations so that we could really highlight all these emerging voices that do not get the opportunity to get heard just because, you know, they might not have grown up in the right neighborhood or went to the right school, or maybe they decided they wanted to be a writer or a creator later on in life, and they didn't have the opportunities. And that's where North Fork is really trying to be a unique festival, where we do reach out to all these philanthropic organizations to try and get funding so that these creators can get their shows made.
North Fork TV Festival version 4.0 takes place October 4th and 5th this year in Greenport, Long Island, we should say, in the New York metro area. And to have more details about this particular project, also about everything going on with the festival, including late developments, is where you go online, www.northfolk.tv. That's www.northfolk.tv. And to want to know about the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation and what they do in the area of not just TV, but media and the world of science and technology, here's their website to check out, Sloan.org. That's Sloan.org. And again, congratulations to the Sloan Foundation for both being involved with the Hot Zone miniseries that was on National Geographic a couple of weeks ago. A lot of people think that will be up in the running for Best Miniseries, for an Emmy Award, maybe for Peabody Award next year. We will see. Once again, North Fork TV Festival, October 4th and 5th in Long Island, www.northfolk.tv for all the details. And Eliza, I just want you to know that we would love to invite whoever wins the science tech competition to be with us on the show to showcase their pilot. So once you know that
would be
invitation.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. Elias, Heather, thank you both very much for coming on. Good luck with the festival. We hope to get back to you and your fellow organizers around the time the festival is about to happen in September. And in the meantime, keep on cooking, making the festival version 4.0 really, really great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Simon. It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
Xavier, Eliza, and Heather, have a super weekend.
You too.
Goodbye. Eliza and Heather is joining us live from New York and Stony Brook University on Long Island, respectively, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We're still waiting for a correct answer to this question. Reed Hatley, the actor, starred in a pair of half-hour crime dramas between 1950 and 1955. Name both of them. Actor Reed Hatley, that's R-E-E-D-H-A-D-L-E-Y, starred in a pair of half-hour crime dramas on television between 1950 and 1955, one after the other. Name both of them. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win a notepad from the fine folks at Telaria. We did have an entry come in 2 days ago, and we got one of the two right, but not the other. And we're still waiting for a response from that person. So, again, we're waiting for that winner. You could be our second weekly winner in a row, so go for it. Email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. If you missed the question a moment ago, we'll try to bring it to you one more time before we leave today. If not, we'll post it tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. But remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. This is Tomorrow Be Televised. We're on the program all about two with you Mondays and Fridays, usually an hour, sometimes 90 minutes or more, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. We're also presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Don't forget, you can check out our show anytime you like at blogtalkradio.com/televised. All of our 2019 episodes you will find there. And also, check out our podcast version anytime you like at iTunes, Apple TV and Speakers Podcast app, and of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you are right there. When we come back, we will be right with the executive producer of the brand new TSN game show, Best Ever Trivia Show. We're talking about Brandon Huntington. He joins us live from Sherman Oaks, California, after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradioandspeaker.com. Together, more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow on VCR, it's the Been There, Done That show. Very unusual talk and more. The Been There, Done That show tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, that's VCR 24/7 available to you at YouTube.com. Welcome back tomorrow, Tomorrow Televised on this Friday of June 2019. And welcome to those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. So I'm Adam Bailey, live from New York. 79 beautiful degrees here in the Big Apple, and we're expecting a marvelous weekend. No rain, or very little rain, and a lot of good sunshine, but not humid. And we like that here in the New York metro area. Another big guest coming your way in the half hour ahead. And if you just joined us, you can get involved. So do so at 646-652-2906. It's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anyway, catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Chat room is open, we're happy to say, after being out for the last week or so. And it's SimonApple04. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. So tell us, you have somebody already in the room. So join them, put your questions or comments there, or give us that ring, and we will get to them. Well, if you missed this past Monday on Jeopardy, the person that was going for Ken Jennings' record did not make it. James Holzhauer. But Ken should be very happy because he's about to get involved in a new game show enterprise that premieres this Monday at 4 o'clock on the Game Show Network, GSN. And it's called Best Ever Trivia Show, hosted by Sherry Shepherd. Joining us live from Sherman Oaks, California, in another interview exclusive, the executive producer, Brennan Huntington. Brennan, welcome in.
Hi, how are you?
Very fine, thank you. So you, like a lot of other people who were sort of relieved that James did not break the Jeopardy record by Ken Jennings?
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things that came up that we were all thinking that he could possibly knock Ken off the top of the pile. But to Ken's luck, he didn't do it.
Are you going to invite James if you get a second season? I'm curious. I was going to ask this earlier, but let's get out of the way now. Will you ask James to call? Because I believe James was on a GSN show a number of years ago, The Chase, where he did very well. He was one of the biggest winners there.
Yes. I'm sorry, what was your question then?
I was saying, any chance if you get a second season, you will invite James to come on your program?
Well, you never know what happens down the road. Second season, we hope to get to a second season. We got to get to the first season first, which premieres June 10th. So we're looking forward to that.
And how did you get the first season? How long has this program been in development for?
We've been going since last, I think, October 2018. We spent about 5 or 6 months in development, and then we got the fortunate green light to go to series, and we took off. We were in production for the last few months and got shot 65 episodes, and we're ready to roll and get them out and get people watching and excited about the show.
By the way, we just had another person join our chat room, SimonApple04Bank. Thanks for coming aboard. Put your question or comment in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. This is a real battle of the trivia experts because you have three contestants and they're going up against three brainiacs who are trying to stop them from getting the money.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's one of these shows where, it's, you know, they're all very smart. The contestants are smart, and the experts are obviously the Ken Jennings of the world who are very smart and have a tremendous wealth of knowledge in their trivia bank there. And it's really hard for contestants to take on and get through the questions, but they do a great job. They're wonderful people, and it's also a bit of a comedy show. Adding Sherry's personality and humor to it makes it exciting and funny, and also the personality of our experts are really something unique. It's not as dramatic as The Chase, per se, or Jeopardy. There's a lot of humor and comedy in our show that really sort of takes it to a new level, and I think the format of the show will be unique and different and a lot of fun for people to watch and play along with. Tremendous play along with people for people at home.
Before we get into the format, since you brought up the idea of having comedy, how do you bring out the comedy naturally without having it be at the expense of the game itself?
Well, have Sherry Shepherd as your host, first of all. She's fantastic. She really is. She is somebody who can relate to she relates to everyone really well. She is someone who can bring out the funny in a more natural, more inviting way and not poking fun at people. She is self-deprecating. She talks about how what answers she knows and doesn't know. She's very engaging and wonderful. And also, I think the experts from Ken Jennings on down the line, everybody has a very unique sense of humor and personality. They really add to it, along with their tremendous intelligence, including the contestants who are also really right off the charts. You know, they take a it's a challenge for them to get on the show, and they when they get on, they're very excited and they bring personality. And we don't try to steer it down the dramatic path versus really down the humorous and you know, it's family entertainment. You can watch it with anybody, and anybody can play along, no matter how challenging the trivia might be.
Sherry has a bit of involvement in the past with Game Show Network. She was involved with the new game revival for several years. We've also seen her in various roles on game shows as both contestant, celebrity contestant, as well as host. And I wonder what she how she brings all of that to him. By the way, I still get a kick out of seeing her Family Feud faux pas, where she on Celebrity Family Feud, where she got the answer to the question and. Steve Harvey was like ribbing her, like, this is Family Feud, this is not therapy. I will not repeat the answer because it was a very salacious answer for radio. We probably off the air if we said it. But anyway,
right.
But I'm curious how you were able to get Sherry on the program, and again, what she brings to the table is both being a host but also being a contestant.
Yeah, you know what? Sherry had a history of game shows before her career in television, is that she used to watch game shows with her grandmother. It was something that she did growing up, and it was something they did together, and she fell in love with it. And she's always had an affinity towards game shows. She loved it, and she likes being a game show host. She really, really takes it to heart, and she does it really well. I loved working with Sherry. I've worked with a lot of different game show hosts over the years, and Sherry is really right there amongst the best. She's wonderful and charming, and what she brings is that charm, is her knowledge of game shows from growing up, playing them with her grandmother, to really being able to, you know, to own this and understand the nuances of a game show and being a host. Being a host of a game show isn't easy. Being able to drive the traffic, understand where the questions and where the contestants are and how to get to the experts and they, you know, it's a traffic cop, somebody who's doing a great job at managing all those different aspects.
Mm-hmm. So how does the format work? We have our three, we have our contestants, we have our experts. So how does the game work?
Yeah, so how it works is this. We have three contestants who are on the show who are there to face off against three trivia experts. And what happens is they'll compete over a series of three different rounds of trivia. And in the first round, they get to pick a different category, one of two categories. And then they will be asked a series of multiple choice questions about that specific category, and they answer the questions. For every point in the first round they get right, they get 50 points. And their points will double if the expert they chose in that round gets it wrong, and they can, so it becomes sort of like a bonus if one of the experts gets stumped by one of the questions, so which is hard to do. So there's some humor in that, and seeing if we can stump the expert gets stumped, and that takes care of sort of round one and two with the points that escalate. And then in round three, they have to make an assessment of where, if they know the, once they pick a category, they have to figure out if they want to go with their own answer or with the expert's answer that they're competing with. And if they go with their own answer, they get 400 points. If they go with the expert's answer, they get 200 points, sort of a safety net. And at the end of that round, the contestant with the most points goes on to the final round, where they go into a head-to-head competition against the expert who did the best throughout that half hour.
So how does both sound work, and hopefully what they can win?
I'm sorry, you have to say that one more time?
I was saying, how does the bonus round work, and how much is at stake?
Yeah, so what's at stake is if they win the episode, they win $10,000, and if they beat the expert, if they win the episode, they win $10,000, and they earn the right to come back again and defend it to try again for another $10,000. And if they can do it three times in a row, then they qualify to be one of the trivia experts on our show. So if they're beating our show and beating our experts, then they have a good chance at becoming one of the experts on our actual show, which is a unique twist on game shows and offers a unique way for people to get involved and follow along.
And
all the round,
$30,000.
They can walk away with $30,000 if they win three episodes in a row.
We're speaking with the executive producer of Best Ever Trivia Show, Brendan Huntington. The program premieres at 4 o'clock on Monday afternoon on GSN, the Game Show Network. And Brendan joins us live from Sherman Oaks, California, great country, part of the USA, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Coming up, I'm with you live from New York, 79 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our guest, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple041. Don't forget, 1 week from today on the program, we will have the executive producer with Steph Curry of the new ABC game show, Holy Moly. If you've ever played miniature golf, or if you haven't, you've never seen miniature golf quite like Holy Moly. With Joe Tessitore, by the way, the marvelous Monday Football ESPN voice from Play-by-Play as one of the hosts, and Wes Denning, the executive producer, will be with us as our lead guest. Also, we'll meet a former cable network executive, cable in terms of, I should say, cable system ownership, MSO. His name is Michael Wilner. At one point, he was the head of one of the top 10 cable operators in the country, Insight Communications. Now he runs his own shop called Pantera. We'll hear what he's doing and his thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going. Michael Wilner with Wes Denning. That's a week from today, 3 p.m. New Pacific, right here. On Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Brent, how long did it take to get the contestants as well as to get the experts?
Well, everything takes about, pre-production takes about, let's call it about 8 weeks, plus some casting for contestants. And so, you know, they go through a process of auditioning for the experts and making sure, you know, with personality and smart and all of that, we want to make sure we have the right group, the right chemistry that matches with Sherry. And we found a wonderful group of people that really sort of meshed with Sherry, from with Ken Jennings to Ryan Chafee to Jonathan Korblaw to Raj Dwalia. These are very smart, very intelligent, and Muffy Morocco types, who are wonderful contestants who bring such great personality and charm and tremendous smarts and tremendous intelligence, and their trivia knowledge is just so vast. They offer a great, great addition and great extra, you know, it's the icing on the cake with their personalities.
You know, earlier we had Daniel Schwartz on from Ripley's Believe It or Not, which is a series that is based on one of the most popular sources of factoids, Strange and True You'll Ever See. And it's interesting that we wrap up with you and your series because it's also based on trivia, factoids, and knowledge. And, you know, one of the things that people talk about when they talk about Jeopardy is the writing of the show, which this past season, the writers got a Daytime Emmy Award for their work. How important is writing to your series, and how do you work with the writers to come up with the kind of trivia questions that, A, are great gameplay, but also can elicit very funny answers?
Excuse me. The writing is extremely important for our show. They have to have tremendous knowledge and tremendous smarts to be writing for this show, much like on Jeopardy. The research team really, you know, vets the material, making sure it's solid. But on our show, it really is, you know, the same thing. And our material isn't about going for humor, as it is about getting the real facts and diving deep into a subject, a category. And it's being able to, for writers to discern a good category and be able to dive deep into it and go, you know, into the weeds, if you will, a little bit more to find the nuances in a category or history. And it's a really wide variety of topics. From, it could be anything from sewing to history to presidents to you name it, that are subjects on our show. And while our trivia is more straightforward and very play-along friendly, it's very intelligent and very sharp and very – you've got to have a good foundation of knowledge to be able to play our game. But we do make it multiple choice, so we have a little bit more play-along accessibility for people at home.
Mm-hmm. Talk about how you got involved in the world of game show television. Was this something you wanted to do all your life, and how did you break into the field?
Game shows, for me, I sort of fell into it. I worked with a company called Stone Stanley back in the mid-90s, and they were sort of the game show guru's gods at the time in the 90s, and Scott Stone and David Stanley were two very well-established producers in that field, and I worked through the ranks of their company and produced shows such as Legends of the Hidden Temple and Shop Till You Drop and a few others that they had, and sort of it became a natural fit for me. It was something that I understood about competition and game, and have been doing it ever since. And I worked with Merv Griffin in the right before he passed away on Merv Griffin's Crosswords. That was a series in syndication. That was a wonderful trivia show that unfortunately went away when he passed away. But, you know, game shows are something that are unique and fun and dynamic and bring a lot of, I think, a lot of joy to family viewing versus they don't try to tear people down. These are a lot of fun, and you can watch with anybody, and anybody can play along.
And when you were at Stone Stairway, you were able to work on both shows that were aimed at kids, like Legends of the Hidden Temple, which a lot of people remember fondly from Nickelodeon, so much so that they recently, that last year, they did a made-for-TV movie based on
yes.
the game show. And at the same time, Shop Till You Drop, which had a great run on Lifetime and then later on PAX TV with Pat Finn as the host. And I'm curious what you learned, what you took from each situation and brought it to your own, you know, for you being the entrepreneur doing the game show, you know, under people like Scott and David.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I've learned everything through those two. I mean, from Legends of the Hidden Temple, that was managing a staff and big production and how to manage big stunts and challenges that were, while they were for kids, they were gigantic. The temple run at the end of this show was a massive set piece that required, you know, many, many people to set up, and it took a lot of coordination and how we shot the show and understanding what builds are like and have to do. Even in today's world, they build them like they build them back then, you know. And going to Shop Till You Drop, where it was a fast-paced, you had lots of smaller challenges built with a fast-paced trivia round in that show. In the earlier years, it was just one of those shows that sort of gave you a little taste of everything, and it really made you sort of had to flex a lot of different muscles. So you got a good cross-section of things from large challenges to trivia. And you apply those going forward to all the different shows that I've worked on, even dance shows and singing shows with the likes of Phil Gurin.
I want to talk about Phil in a minute, but speaking of exercise, the contestants really got their exercise on both shows, because they both concluded with runs. The Temple Run, which everybody remembers from Legends, but also the Shop Till You Drop Run, where you had to get those boxes with the various merchandise up and down that whole shopper's row, especially on
yes.
the upper level when you had to come down those stairs, which were circular, and like, whoa, are they gonna like get down there as fast as they can without, you know, tripping and hurting themselves?
Yeah, they were exhausted at the end of that, after that time run. And same with the kids in Legends of the Hidden Temple, physically exhausted. And you know, it's something that everyone sort of, both shows had that ending where you really wanted it, and the energy and the adrenaline was running for both of those shows where they really wanted those things to happen. And like on our show, you know, people really want the money, and the way our fourth round works in Best Ever Trivia Show is they go head-to-head, and it's nerve-wracking. It's intense, and people are spent at the end of our bonus round, our final round in Best Ever Trivia Show.
Mm-hmm. What show did you work with Phil Gurin on?
Oh, let's see. I did several. I did Dancing Fools. I did Singing Bee on CMT, Your Chance to Dance, to name a few.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you move up the ranks to become your own producer? When did that start happening?
Oh, gosh, you know, for me, it sort of happened right away. I was sort of a guy that took control, and I have a very calm, cool style of producing. And I think that sort of, you know, it wasn't about, you know, I know the old school style was yelling and screaming, but it never was mine. I was somebody who was always sort of calm and cool and figured out a way to solve a problem, you know, to problem solve. And I think that's really important to today's world, is really being able to communicate and problem solve and figure out how to do it. Every show, including Best Ever Trivia Show, is one of those shows that, you know, every show's got a little wrinkle, a little something in it that makes it unique, and how it's different and how to problem solve. And that's what's fun about television, is that it really, you know, what you get in television is that it's not the same. It's always different and always fluid, and I think that's what's exciting about this. And with Best Ever, it's, you know, again, that brought in new challenges for everyone to sort of explore and how to problem solve. There are people, it's like a math equation. I don't want to relate it to math, but it's sort of you have to figure out the equation and how to do it.
Also very, very interesting is that you're coming on with GSN with a new show at a time when a lot of the reboots of game show, classic game shows, especially on part of ABC, are coming back this week with Celebrity Family Feud, the $100,000 Pair, which is taped here in New York, Match Game. I mentioned on Monday we're going to have the executive producers of Pressure Luck and Card Sharks. It seems that the demand for bringing back game shows is as high as the demand for bringing new game shows on. And in fact, lately we've had shows like Funny You Should Ask, which Sherry was on, by the way, going into year three this fall on in syndication. The new show, Meredith Vieira, that she is doing, 25 Words or Less, and shows like this.
Yeah, I love the resurgence of game shows, and the fact that they're bringing back some tried and true classics is wonderful. I think it's one of those things that gives all game shows sort of a new life, and I also think that it's good family viewing. I think there's a huge element of that, that you can watch it with your kids and it's okay. And it also, you know, it reopens trivia. I know that the world of the internet has been so, you know, it's there's so many places to take quizzes and things like that, but you know, it's fun to watch it. There's personality that you don't on TV that you don't get with the internet, and I think that's something that's so important that you see with the resurgence of all the shows on the classics that are being brought back and the new ones that are coming up, including our show. It's one of these things that where personality and the style of gameplay is unique and different, and it adds really, you know, a new layer to it. And I think that's something like when you have someone like a Sherry Shepherd who brings her personality that's so amazing and so funny and charming, and everybody, you know, it just brings – it's good for everyone to watch. And I think it's also fun for everyone to engage in and play along with.
It seems also that in terms of game show hosts, we now have a mix of people who came up the ranks from TV and radio, like a Pat Sajak, like an Alex Trebek, like a Pat Finn, like a Kurt Fogg, who had done other things before doing game shows. But we also have stars that are doing game shows, like Alec Baldwin, like Joe McHale, who's going to do Card Sharks, and Elizabeth Banks, who's going to be doing The Pitch Perfect Woman, who's going to be doing Pressure Luck. It seems that, and Sherry, of course, also comes from both being a star but also having previous game shows. It seems that now it's in the sense that with the success that those people have, plus Steve Harvey's had with Family Feud, that anybody can be a game show, as opposed to you have to go through the ranks of doing things in radio or doing things in other things in television, communication, if you will, to be in that field, which was like sort of the guiding light all along. In game show history. What do we think about that, the idea of we're seeing more and more stars having the opportunity to boom, you're a game show host?
I love it, and I'll tell you why. Because it used to be you had to be a game show host and you had to come up through the game show ranks to do it, and I don't think that's needed in today's world. I think the fact is that somebody with the right personality brings a lot to the table. We can teach them how to be a game show host. You know, that happens prior to production. And that's just learning the dance steps, if you will. And I think that the way it is today with the Sherry Shepherds and the Elizabeth Banks and all these people that are coming into this world, I think it's fantastic. They add a unique level of personality and comedy and humor, and they bring something else to the table. The old school game show host, you know, while it works for some shows, in today's world, they need to be able to connect with more people. And the people like Sherry Shepherd, she can relate to a lot of people. She really is dynamic and wonderful and comes across. And she's every man's woman, if I can say that. Every woman's woman. She's the person that people can relate to, and which is different than a tried and true game show host. I think that just is a different world. I love it.
Yeah, and also in some cases the host reflects the viewer. Steve Harvey, I think, has both the respect for the game in Family Feud, but he also has this kind of sixth sense of let me be not just the host, let me be the viewer, and let me spout what the viewer is saying about, you know, good answer. No, it's not a good answer, kind of thing. Or Snoop Dogg, for example, when he does Joker's Wild, I think he's made a great transition with that program. He seems to have a nice flow to it, and he also connects with both the studio audience, the contestants, as well as the contestants as the people at home. She's seeing more, I think, of respect. There's still respect for the show or the format, but there's also this, let's bring the humor in and let's bring an edge to things, but an edge that works.
Yeah, and I also think that, like you said, it's connecting with the real people at home. Again, I go to Sherry right now because she's the person on my radar, and Sherry connects with everybody. I mean, there's no one, you know, that she doesn't connect with. She's wonderful and charming, and, you know, what she brings to the table is immeasurable. And her sense of humor and her ability to keep the train on the tracks, if you will, in the game show world is fantastic. And, you know, we couldn't have asked for a better host. She's absolutely wonderful. And I like the direction. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Brandon. Go ahead. You first.
No, it was one of those things where, you know, we couldn't have asked for a better host. And I think that what she brings to the table is really, you know, adds that next layer that makes the show wonderful and very exciting and worth watching. And I think that's where, you know, the Best Ever Trivia really has a great leg to stand on, because we do have Sherry and we have a great format and fantastic experts.
And it's also great in this era of game shows popping back all over the place to see, A, women and also women of color being involved as hosts and as executive producers too, I might add, of shows as well, all over the place. It's great to see, and in some cases, long overdue. Best Ever Trivia Show premieres this Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on GSN, the Game Show Network. Check the Lowlands Aware, that network is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program, GSN.com. That's where you go. Best Ever Trivia Show, Monday, 4 p.m. Eastern Pacific on GSN. Brandon Huffington, the executive producer of the show, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Good luck to you, Sherry, everybody involved in the series, and hopefully the first 65 is the beginning of a great long run.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Same here, Brandon. Have a super weekend. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Brandon Huntington, the executive producer of Best Ever Trivia Show, hosted by Sherry Shepherd on GSN, joining us live from Sherman Oaks, California. One thing I want to thank all of my guests today and this week for being on the program. Coming up on Monday, more game show executive producers will be popping up. We will have, in one segment, as lead guests, the executive producers of the new versions on ABC of Press Your Luck and Card Sharks. That's John Quinn and Jack Martin. They'll be with us live as our lead guests. Then, from the CBS All Access hit Strange Angel, going to Season 2 next week, creator executive producer Mark Heyman and executive producer David Giglio. And finally, the creator of Night Flight and a subscription video service you can catch on smart TV sets and smart devices, Stuart Shapiro. And don't forget, with our Clap and Trivia question next week, we will offer two prizes from Night Flight. One is Stuart Shapiro's new book, Identify Yourself, and the opportunity for the very first time to get a subscription to a programming service, in this case, Night Flight or Night Flight Plus. So be with us. It's going to be a great 90 minutes in store for you Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. If you came in late on today's episode or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, make it very simple. Go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televise. And don't forget, this weekend, check us out on podcast anytime you like at iTunes, Apple TV and Speakers Podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com. Remember, all you have to do is put Tomorrow We Televise in the search bar when you go to the website at iHeartRadio.com and click, and you're right there. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our program today and our guests? What's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? We want to know. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's a good about our country question of the week and our show to know feature. And remember, you can find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my columns at mediavillage.com. Remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not those of the Block Talk Radio speaker and iHeartRadio. Our production associate, BTR's Candace Williams, ADTO's Block Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Somberg's executive content producer, and the co-founders are Al Levy and Bob Charish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you by Audible.com, an Amazon company, and proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. The 3 free audiobooks and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televise. Tomorrow We Televise. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a sensational weekend. Back with you on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. BTR, Speaker, and the IR Radio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to this weekend, please make it safe and make it great. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned. Believe it or not.